It's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Guy Raz. The income gap is receiving a lot of attention lately. It may be greater today than during colonial times, even when you account for slavery. That's what a new study coming out of the University of California and Harvard suggests. More Americans today are isolating themselves around PLUs, people like us, people who earn like us, in this case. Residential segregation by income is on the rise. Those are the findings of a recent Pew study, and we'll get to that in a bit. But first, let's look at a neighborhood here in Washington, D.C., on the cusp of change. Our cover story today, money, the new neighborhood segregator. It's not so much keeping up with the Joneses as living next door to them. Shaw is a neighborhood rich in history whose fortunes haven't always been so stable.
It's historically been the center of African American culture. Duke Ellington was from here. And in its heyday, Shaw was a mecca for all kinds of African American artists and professionals.
I met up with Peter Tatian, a researcher at the Urban Institute, for a walking tour around Shaw. Change is in the air here. Construction sounds clatter and bang as a new supermarket goes up. But the residential street we walk down is something of an oasis.
This is a hot part of town.
This is just a really charming street. I mean, the architectural details, no two houses are alike. You know, parquet brick for the sidewalks and beautiful tall mature trees and, you know, pretty desirable. Mm-hmm. And on all the lower floors, bars on the window.
Right.
Those window bars are the legacy of a less stable time in Shaw's past.
In the 1960s, during the riots that happened after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, this neighborhood, along with a lot of other inner city neighborhoods, was severely affected by the damage that was caused by rioters. And that was sort of the beginning of a long decline.
But that decline is reversing. Over the past 20 years, 1,000 new people have moved into the neighborhood where Peter Tatian and I strolled. Many of these newcomers are high-income residents. The average family income in and around Shaw in 1979 was less than $50,000. That's adjusted for inflation. Today, it's more than doubled.
And the question is whether that's a sustainable mix or whether this is just, you know, going to take a little more time and then we're just going to see all upper income people.
And while the mix today is a diverse one economically,
if you look at the trend, one maybe has got to be pessimistic about what the future might hold.
My name is Michelle P. Baylor.
Michelle Baylor has lived through many of these changes in LaDroite Park, a historic enclave within Shaw. Michelle and her family have been in the same house there for nearly a century. She points to a framed photo on her living room table.
This is my grandfather. He's the one that got the house in 1929. My mom, she got married in 1950.
She got married standing right in front of this window.
Her and my dad.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this house has so much history for
yes.
you.
Enough history that Michelle wouldn't think of budging, even as she's seen some of her old neighbors go.
A lot of people who did not own these houses, they could not afford to keep them because they were going up.
Right.
These are million-dollar homes around here. When my mom died, I got so many letters of people wanting this house because this is a gold mine. Mm-hmm. I just tore it right up. I could never. They would have turned this house around, probably made it a condo. Mm-hmm. That's what they have done to a lot of these houses on the block.
In the 1950s, Michelle's grandfather was something of a neighborhood watchman. He worked for the public school system where he got Michelle's father a job.
Everybody in this neighborhood, they worked. And my grandfather, he was the type of person, he looked out for people and he found jobs for people because that's just what was in his heart.
A relative newcomer to LaDroite Park is Myla Moss, who bought her home in 1999 for about $150,000. Today, it's worth $500,000. She went to school at nearby Howard University, but back then, she wouldn't walk through the neighborhood she now calls home due to the crime and drugs. Now, as advisory neighborhood commissioner, she's working to preserve LaDroite Park's history, including the renovation of the historic Howard Theater.
This was the first African-American theater in the country that allowed black performances, allowed black audiences. And this was the start of Amateur Night with Ella Fitzgerald. And when I purchased my home, I began to be educated by many in the community about the history.
We're looking at income disparity in neighborhoods, income segregation. Are you worried as someone who's obviously in love with this neighborhood. Just generally about this notion of poorer people being segregated, and for that matter, more affluent people segregated and not even seeing the problems of poorer people.
I am worried about that. Economic disparity is growing, unfortunately, and it's cost prohibitive to move into this community anymore. And I think that the affluent residents want the non-affluent residents to be here.
You do? Do you think they want them here?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that they are acting in malice and trying to move people out. I really don't. I think everybody on the planet wants a nice neighborhood, a good school, a good hospital to go to, a grocer. Young people who come to Washington to work on the Hill and to do policy and find a way to buy a home are not seeking to change the community. They're seeking to be a part of it.
Paul Taylor has studied the shift in neighborhood income segregation. He's with the Pew Research Center and co-author of the recent study, Tracking Its Rise.
30 years ago, about 9% of all upper-income people lived in predominantly upper-income neighborhoods. That share is now doubled to 18%. The share of lower-income living in predominantly lower-income neighborhoods has also grown. 30 years ago, it was 23%. Now it's 28%.
So you are seeing people basically living with people whose income levels are a lot like theirs.
We're seeing a trend in that direction. It remains the case that the heavy majority of people or households are in census tracts that are predominantly either middle class or mixed. But it's a little bit less so than in the past. 30 years ago, something like 86% of all households lived in such either majority middle or majority mixed neighborhoods. Now it's down to 75%.
Why is this happening?
This was a broad trend. We looked at all the major metropolitan areas in the country. The same trend I've described has played out in 27 of the top 30. So this is pretty much a national trend. The local variance probably goes to lots of factors. And I think in-migration has been a major factor in some of these cities. Just the layout of the cities, the physical, geographic, topographical layout may be a factor. Historical settlement patterns, the nature of the local economy, the nature of the local workforce, housing discrimination, real estate practices, on and on it goes.
So, Paul Taylor, a lot of people would say, well, this is self-evident. Of course this is going to happen. What's the big deal?
Well, yeah, listen, like tends to attract like. What's the big deal? One of the things we say to ourselves as a country right from the beginning is e pluribus unum, out of many, one. And that's been part of the magic of America throughout our entire history. We are a place that lots of different people come, and they have different income levels, the wealth levels, they have different racial and ethnic backgrounds, immigrant backgrounds, and all the rest. And yet somehow we do make it work. There is a common America. You know, we are in a political moment where the sense of the middle, the sense of the cohesion isn't feeling particularly robust. There is a profound polarization of the electorate. And one outcome of that is a sense that the political process is ossified, polarized. Washington doesn't work. The public feels that way. So, frankly, part of the reason for the political ossification has to do with gerrymandering, has to do with the way that we draw lines, and increasingly folks who draw the lines in state after state do so to create safe districts, whether for Republicans or Democrats.
Paul Taylor, Executive Vice President of the Pew Research Center, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you.
Now, here's something else that caught our eye in this Pew study that we've been talking about. The top three cities where residential segregation by income is most extreme are all in Texas: Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. There, about a quarter of upper-income households are in majority upper-income areas. So to find out why Texas seems to be ground zero for this trend, I spoke to sociologist Steven Kleinberg. I asked him, what's going on in Texas?
There is land in this region of the country. There is open spaces. Houston was built on a crummy little bayou 50 miles from any natural barrier in any direction. No mountains, no big streams or lakes. And people have the option here that they have more difficulty elsewhere to live in what we were calling the PLUs, living in communities made up of people like us. We tend to be uncomfortable when large numbers of people have much more money or much less money than each of us living in these communities. And people in Houston have a better opportunities to express that because we've got all these subdivisions and and gated communities and so on all around the region.
Now, at the top of this show, we went to neighborhoods in D.C., Shaw and LaDroite Park in Washington, and heard a lot about what a tight-knit middle-class community meant historically and how people could talk to and help each other, and that's often called social capital. Are we losing that?
Well, social capital is critical. We tend to think of resources as human capital, education and financial capital, money in the bank. But social capital that connects you to the opportunities that are out there, that provides support systems when you're having difficulty. When you're segregated by income, it means that there's an isolation of the rich just around other rich people with no real sense of how the other half of America is living and struggling today. And if you're isolated as a poor person in poor communities, you have no access to the opportunities that emerge when people have good jobs that are connected to new opportunities that are out there. And the networks and the information systems and the opening of doors occurs much less in these isolated worlds than when we were all part of a single community.
That's sociologist Steven Kleinberg, co-director of the Kinder Institute for Urban Research at Rice University in Houston. Here's a stat from the Economic Policy Institute that speaks to the way we live now. In the 1960s, a typical CEO earned about 20 times what a typical worker would. Today, that number is close to 400 times as much. E pluribus unum. It may be the American ideal, but perhaps not really the way we live now. This is Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News.